The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Those are the headlines. Man, I love more than the 5 at 5.
Thank you very much, Ben. That's what we would have been talking about, I suspect, to start the programme if it hadn't been for the shock news of Leo Varadkar's resignation. Your last word to 0874100102. But let's just hear a little bit of his announcement at just after 12 noon.
Of course, there are areas in which we have been much less successful and some in which we have sadly gone backwards. But I hope you'll forgive me if I leave it to others to point them out on a day like this. They will receive plenty of airtime and column space. When I became party leader and Taoiseach back in June 2017, I knew that one part of leadership is knowing when the time has come to pass on the baton to somebody else and then having the courage to do it. That time is now. So I am resigning as President and Leader of Fine Gael effective today, and will resign as Taoiseach as soon as my successor is able to take up that office. I've asked our party general secretary and executive council to provide for the new leader to be elected in advance of the Ardesh on Saturday, April 16th, thus allowing a new Taoiseach to be elected when the Dáil resumes after the Easter break. I know this will come as a surprise to many people and a disappointment to some, and I hope at least you will understand my decision. I know that others will, how shall I put it, cope with the news just fine. That is the great thing about living in a democracy.
A sense of humour there. People will cope with the news just fine, some of them at least. But let's hear a little bit more of his explanation as to why he's done it. Could it be that he was very much influenced not just by the referendum defeats of the weekend before last, but by consistent opinion polls showing Fine Gael not doing well in the forthcoming European local elections and indeed the general election?
My reasons for stepping down are both personal and political. I believe this government can be re-elected, and I believe my party, Fine Gael, can gain seats in the next Dáil. Most of all, I believe the re-election of this three-party government would be the right thing for the future of our country, continuing to take us forward, protecting all that's been achieved and building on it. But after careful consideration and some soul-searching, I believe that a new Taoiseach and a new leader will be better placed than me to achieve that. To renew and strengthen the team, to focus our message and policies, to drive implementation. And after 7 years in office, I don't feel I'm the best person for that job anymore. There are loyal colleagues and good friends contesting local European elections, and I want to give them the best chance possible. And I think they have a better chance under a new leader. I am standing aside in the absolute confidence that the country and the economy are in a good place, and that my colleagues in government from all three parties, Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens, and the Oireachtas, will continue to work hard for the nation's best interests. On a personal level, I've enjoyed being Taoiseach, leader and a cabinet member since March 2011. I've learned so much about so many things, met so many people who I'd never got to meet, been to places I would never have seen, both home and abroad. And I am deeply grateful for it. And despite the challenges, would wholeheartedly recommend a career in politics to anyone who's considering it.
Okay, some of Leo Varadkar's speech. We'll have more later. In a moment, we'll also talk to Shane Ross, former Transport Minister, who served under Leo Varadkar as Taoiseach in his first government. But Aisling Maloney, political editor of the Irish Daily Mail, when and how did the word go about that this shock announcement was happening?
Very good. Yeah, yes, Matt, you've given me a bit of a promotion there. But indeed, look, so this announcement this morning, it came as quite a shock, as you said there. So what didn't happen was this sort of, you know, whispering backroom talk about the fact that he could be going. This was not flagged in any way, shape or form. The parliamentary party was largely in the dark, it seems, about this decision. While it wasn't Mr. Varadkar's prerogative to inform the parliamentary party or consult them on his decision, they say that they were not consulted and I suppose surprised, just as everyone else has been. So what we understand from what we've heard from Leo Varadkar, the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, and the Green Party leader Eamon Ryan, was that they were first told about this last night. So each Monday, the three coalition leaders, Matt, have a meeting together to discuss what's coming up at Cabinet and matters of the week. And at this meeting, Leo Varadkar pulled the two of them aside and said, look, I've made this decision. And both of them have said that they were surprised by this. So it's not like it was something that was well flagged with the coalition leaders. They weren't consulted either on this decision, which you could say will impact the coalition. Of course, it will impact Fine Gael, but because they're in this three-party coalition, it will also impact those other parties. So they weren't consulted. We're hearing this morning that there was, you know, calls to set up what happened today. And I suppose a flurry of activity around the place of this announcement and what was going to happen this morning, and I suppose the movement and the choreography around it all. So that all happened from very early this morning. Then the announcement came that there would be an announcement at 12 o'clock and it was going to be a political earthquake, and such it happened at 12. There was speculation that it would affect the upper echelons of Fine Gael, and obviously it has, but this also, I suppose, kind of rocks the government in a way, because Mr. Varadkar is currently serving as the Taoiseach.
Sorry, Aisling, did anyone try and talk him out of this?
It's an interesting one, Matt, because I suppose the cards seem to have been kept quite close to his chest on this. I don't think that was the case, but what I think is more likely the case is that, you know, Fine Gael and the Taoiseach have access to polling that we as the public don't have access to. You know, they're testing, they're focus grouping, they're surveying all the time to see what their odds are. And I think instead of being talked out of it, I think there may have been a sense of being talked into it and this being a politically wise move. Now, there is no suggestion of any type of a heave with any other candidates looking to be Taoiseach pushing Mr. Varadkar out. That has not been suggested and is not what has happened, it seems. But what could be more likely is that it was, I suppose, a weighing up of what's best for Fine Gael, or on the reverse, what's damage control here for Fine Gael. They've been in power for a long time. Lots of suggestion of power fatigue. People in the public, I suppose, kind of not sick of, but have seen a lot of the Fine Gael senior ministers in the last 13 years. Are they ready to have new leaders? And is a way to, I suppose, kind of circumvent that, putting a fresh person in as leader of Fine Gael? Of course, I mean, Matt, as well, people will know that there has been a large number of Fine Gael, sitting Fine Gael TDs, who have said that they will not contest the next election. Just yesterday, Kieran Cannon made it 10 sitting TDs who said they will not contest the next election for Fine Gael. And now it seems Mr. Varadkar nearly brings that to 11, because there's never been a Taoiseach who stepped down as the leader of the party and then thus giving up the Taoiseach, okay, who then sat on after. So we could be seeing 11 members leaving.
Aisling, stay on the line there. I want to bring in Shane Ross, who was a former Minister for Transport under Leo Varadkar's first administration. What was your reaction when you heard the news, Shane?
I was extremely surprised, Matt, like everybody else, I suppose, this morning. And I wondered why, because, you know, I followed these things very closely on a minute basis. And I thought he'd done his best public relations job for several years, just over the weekend when St. Patrick's Day in America. And I thought, oh, well, you know, he's going to get a boost out of that, and that'll give him a bit of a run into the general election. So I was extremely surprised. But I suppose, I mean, as Aisling was saying there, you know, you've got he did have the referendums, which were a disaster for the government and particularly for himself. He did have the sitting TDs, another one gone and more to come. And he was facing local elections and European elections, which looked like they were going to be pretty awful. Now, I would have thought that maybe what happened, and it's only a theory now at this stage, is he was looking at these and saying, look, we're going to do pretty badly in them, which Fine Gael were going to do very, very badly, and then people might come for him. They might, at that stage, they might have said, look, the leader is the problem and you're going to have to go. So he might have been, there must have been an element of, you know, jumping before the posse comes for you, I think.
So has he done the right thing, do you think?
Well, I think he's done the right thing for Fine Gael. Yes, I do. I think he's, you know, he said this himself quite simply, under a new leader, we will do better. And I think that's probably true. I think he had become a liability to the party. And, you know, he was constantly third or fourth of the, in the ranking of leaders, which isn't good enough for a Taoiseach at all. So I think when he said, you know, under a new leader, I think we'll do better, we'll have a better chance of winning more seats, I think he's correct about that, definitely correct about that. So by the party, he's done the right thing. By the country, we'll never know. But the,
what sort of Taoiseach was he like to work under?
He was a he was very easy to work with, to work under. He was very agreeable, very approachable. He would be very helpful when you had problems, in other words, political problems, and you wanted, you know, you're getting flak from various quarters or from people who supported you, he would get you out of a hole if he could. He was pretty determined as well to get his own way, but he wasn't in it. I never heard him raise his voice. I never heard him raise his voice in cabinet. He was always looking for solutions. He was good at all of that. I think he was a little bit weak in some cases. When I tried to get various things through, he used to start trying to get them through. I think of the speeding legislation on road safety, and then he met opposition from his backbenchers, and he made me withdraw that because he couldn't get it through. That he wasn't very strong in facing up, I think, to his backbenchers, and he didn't like, this is an interesting thing, he didn't like any open confrontations. You know, when we were dealing with Kenny, we'd have the most almighty rows, and there'd be a kind of shouting match across the cabinet table. That didn't happen with Leo at all. It was this quiet kind of diplomacy. If there was a disagreement, it was quietly settled. His method was different, and he certainly wasn't into having difficulties, open difficulties or open rows with his colleagues at all. He was someone who I think everybody around the table quite liked, but I don't think anybody was his friend. And do you understand what I mean by that?
Yeah, did he live up to his potential? Because the Fine Gael Parliamentary Party, when they decided upon him to replace Enda Kenny, and effectively preempted the ordinary members of the party who were much more in favour of Simon Coveney, they felt that Leo Varadkar's face on posters would deliver seats, and then there was a disastrous 2020 general election. So, given that he had developed a reputation as something of a straight shooter, did he actually deliver when he actually had power?
No, he didn't. I mean, absolutely not. You put your finger on it. And this is probably the reason why he's gone, and he didn't want to face another election when he was facing another defeat. Yeah, you're right. He was the great white hope. I mean, it was 7 years ago. He was only, 37 when he became Taoiseach. And obviously very, very young. He was a great white hope for Fine Gael. He was a great white hope that he'd bring young voters, new ideas along with him. And of course, Leo turned out to be deeply conservative, really, in his outlook. Not on social issues, of course, but on financial issues and things like that. He was very conservative, you know, he's market led. And he just did not deliver. I think he never really actually clicked with the electorate after he got in. Beforehand, And I would have been one of those two who would have said this is exciting, he's going to change things because he's young and because he's got lots of liberal ideas. He didn't do that, and he became a kind of a figure of the establishment very, 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 very quickly. So it was a great disappointment. You know, you talk about the general election; it was a catastrophe, the 2020 general election for him. But by-elections have been bad for him as well, and I think facing up to local election defeats and then a European elections defeats would have been maybe too much for him to handle, and that might have been spelt real danger for him. So in a sense, I think he might have been anticipating something which may or may not have been going to happen.
Okay, Shane Ross, thank you very much for being with us. Aisling Maloney, the political correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, is staying with us, and we'll be joined by Holly Kearns of the Social Democrats when we come back after the traffic with Mark Hogan. Just before we talk to Aisling Maloney again and meet Holly Kearns, let's hear a little bit more of Leo Varadkar from the day in 2017 when he won the Fine Gael leadership.
And I think if my election as leader of Fine Gael today has shown anything, it is that prejudice has no hold in this republic. Around the world, people look to Ireland to be reminded that this is a country where it doesn't matter where you come from, but rather where you want to go. And I know when my father travelled 5,000 miles to build a new home in Ireland, I doubt he ever dreamed that his son would one day grow up to become its leader. And that despite his differences, his son would be treated the same, and judged by his actions and character, not as origins or identity.
Leo Varadkar, when he became leader of Fine Gael in 2017, and Aisling Maloney, a political correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, may be forgotten now, but how significant was that at the time? Not just his ethnic background, but the fact that he was a gay man becoming Taoiseach as well.
Yeah, as you say, Matt, the significance of that did not go unnoticed, especially around the world. I think lots of countries still refer to us as having an openly gay Taoiseach, you know, whose ethnic background isn't fully Irish. Like, you know, that is quite significant coming from a line of Taoiseach who were very similar in their backgrounds and not openly gay. And so it's something that I suppose the country of Ireland, because Leo Varadkar has been in that position and has had that profile, has benefited from. And I suppose it's this symbolism as well of this new Ireland, as Leo Varadkar said there when he was nominated to be Taoiseach back in 2017. He was saying the prejudice has no hold in this republic. I suppose Ireland, largely seen across the world as a conservative country in many ways, and this is kind of a signal that there was a liberalising of our country, and that also came with subsequent votes around gay marriage and abortion rights in this country. So I think, you know, that hit the symbolism of him as Taoiseach, having those attributes and the symbolism of those two votes, I think, helped Ireland in many ways change the story and the narrative around it across the world. And also, I suppose, you know, symbolism matters a lot with your head of state. You know, we talk a lot about, I suppose, Mary Lou MacDonald being the leader of the opposition, being a woman, and we've never had a female Taoiseach, and that does matter to people. So, you know, having someone like Leo Varadkar, who had those attributes, now stepping down, I suppose there's questions over whether you go back, I suppose, maybe a step, it could be seen, to a more traditional candidate, or whether a female will want to step into that position in order to, you know, take up the helm and the I suppose the privilege, it could be seen as being the first female Taoiseach. So that will all be weighed upon and I suppose judged up and balanced up by the Fine Gael party when they are selecting their new.
And that's something we're going to get to after 5 o'clock this evening. Holly Kearns, as leader of the Social Democrats, how do you think the departure of Leo Varadkar as Taoiseach is going to affect the political landscape?
It's hard to know. I mean, at the moment when the government are basically saying, oh, well, this is fine, this is all well and good, we'll have a new Taoiseach in a couple of days or a couple of weeks, all of this kind of stuff. I think, like, the reality is that if you speak to a lot of people in Fine Gael, they would say that there'll be an election in November. So electing a new Taoiseach now, you'd imagine that's the kind of position you need a bit of time to bed into, and then going straight into election and into another Taoiseach, it seems like, to a certain extent, is not the right time to go to the people so they have a real mandate. And I think, you know, essentially the Taoiseach is saying, you know, I think we have a better chance under a new leader. And I have to say, I don't think a personality change is going to change how Fine Gael will do or the approach that this government is taking, because I think it's an underestimation of people. I think they want a different approach. And the Fine Gael approach isn't working. And I think...
But is that what maybe the opposition fears, that if Fine Gael puts a new leader in place, that leader, to mark out his or her distinctiveness, will change approach on a number of things, and that might make Fine Gael more re-electable than it would have been under Leo Varadkar?
No, I think the Fine Gael ideology is what the problem is here. So we see this in so many different areas, the biggest issues facing the country, this continuous approach of throwing money at the private sector to try and solve the issues that we're facing is not working. And I think people are really sick and tired of that. And if they're so sure that what they're doing is correct and their approach is right and people have faith in that, well, why not put it to the people at this point? Because when you consider it in that context, Matt, that we're 4 years into a 5-year term of this government and the Taoiseach is stepping down, it very much looks like he knows the writing's on the wall for this government and he's getting out now. And so that's evident in their failures on housing, on health, on disability services, on climate. And none of those issues are going to be addressed by a change in a Fine Gael leader. Ultimately, we do need a change in government. We need a general election.
Would you credit him with any successes?
I think, yeah, it's important too. Like, obviously, they went into government at a very difficult time, and he spoke in his kind of leaving speech there earlier about how they bought, you know, the government from a deficit to a surplus, the budget.
The country was bust effectively in 2011 when the Fine Gael Labour government took control. But the way they went about solving things,
exactly.
Was that done fairly inequitably?
No, but that's what I'm saying. And I think the approach has not been one that people want to continue with. And, you know, this kind of throwing money at everything, relying on the private sector, failure after failure, and not even acknowledging that isn't working. And when you bring a country from a deficit to a surplus like that, you end up with an €8 billion surplus and you can't address the shortcoming in our disability services, our housing crisis, the trolley crisis, all of these things. I think people start to feel like we need a change. And I think the Taoiseach can see that change coming too.
Let me go back to Aisling Maloney to finish this section from the Irish Daily Mail. He did mention in his speech personal reasons for giving up. Did he really spell those out in the speech, or is this given rise to some speculation as to might be other reasons as to why he wants to go?
Yes, Matt, and actually we were, as the media, the press corps in Leinster House here, were expecting that the Taoiseach would take questions from us after he made his short statement, but he didn't. He turned on his heel and went back into government buildings. And as you see there, he alluded to personal reasons, but he also spoke about how the reasoning behind his decision was quite simple, that he needed to pass over the power, that he wanted to give Fine Gael a better chance in the election. But because he didn't spell out exactly, I suppose, why he was going for those personal reasons, it has led to some speculation. But he attempted to kind of dampen that down by trying to say that there was nothing more behind this other than giving Fine Gael a better chance the next time around. But yes, there is, I suppose, questions over why. Now, the timing of it, could this not have been done months ago? Could this not have waited until the next election? The parliamentary party were expecting Mr. Bradgar to lead them into the next election. But as I said, you know, behind closed doors, there's all sorts of polling, surveying and weighing up of options. And I suppose what's at stake here is Fine Gael's future. There's a likelihood that they could be going into opposition after this long in power. Is that what they want, or do they want to give a good shout at at the next election, and how do they increase their chances after this long in power?
Thank you very much for being with us, Aisling Maloney, political correspondent of the Irish Daily Mail, and Holly Kearns, leader of the Social Democrats. Okay, lots of your comments about Leo Varadkar, saying quite possibly the worst reign of any Taoiseach, has done absolutely nothing of significance, that it was of benefit to the Irish people in the long term. However, another one says Leo Varadkar has been a tremendous servant to Ireland, so intelligent, knowledgeable on a vast range of topics. He always spoke in such a measured, knowledgeable way, and I was proud to have him represent the country. So let's actually hear a little bit of Leo Varadkar. Possibly the most important speech that he made was a special televised address to the nation on St. Patrick's Day 2020, when he issued a stark warning about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic.
We're in the middle of a global and national emergency, a pandemic, the likes of which none of us has seen before. So far, the number of cases in Ireland has been relatively small. However, we believe the number will rise to 15,000 cases or more by the end of the month, and rise further in the weeks thereafter. The vast majority of us who contract COVID-19 will experience only a mild illness, but many will be hospitalised, and sadly some people will die. We cannot stop the virus, but working together we can slow it in its tracks and push it back. We can, as you've heard by now, flatten the curve, but only if everyone takes sustained action. Nothing less will do. This is the calm before the storm, before the surge. And when it comes, and it will come, never will so many ask so much of so few. We'll do all that we can to support them.
Okay, Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post, and Gary Murphy, professor of politics from Dublin City University, our regular political experts, are with us in the studio. And Danny, if I could start with you, could it be that Leo Varadkar was at his best when he was making speeches extolling people to do things, but that he didn't live up to it himself in delivery as a Taoiseach?
I think it's a very fair criticism. I think Leo Varadkar was elected by his party colleagues on the promise that he would deliver them to electoral nirvana, that he would be the vote getter, he would transcend traditional Fine Gael boundaries and tap into a much broader audience, and he just systematically has failed at that. I mean, 5 or 6 by-election defeats, a general election defeat, 2 referendum defeats in the last 2 or 3 weeks. His electoral record as a Taoiseach was woeful.
And sorry, wasn't that exactly why the parliamentary party elected him? They didn't go to the wider Fine Gael membership. They effectively had it stitched up before the membership had to have a say. And the membership went for Simon Coveney.
By 2-to-1 basis. If you remember vividly, I remember like my extended family, you know, come from kind of rural parts of Ireland and you know, to you know, traditional Fine Gael country. And they always said, that's not our leader. You know, Leo Varga does not stand for rural Ireland, doesn't stand for our traditional values, etc. like that. So there was that disconnect apparent even before he was elected, but he had the TDs and senators in, you know, sewn up. He had ran himself, and I think Owen Murphy deserves probably an awful lot of credit, because if you go back, Leo Varga was part of that ill-fated heave against Enda Kenny, which was chaotic and absolutely shambolic. And it's clear that someone around Leo Varga was very organised when it came to the TDs and senators in 2017, but his electoral record beyond that is woeful, and that I think will go down as his enduring legacy of Fine Gael, or for Fine Gael.
Why was he so unsuccessful, Gary?
It's hard to know, Matt, to be perfectly frank. Look at the 2020 election. I mean, Fine Gael called that spectacularly wrong by putting all their eggs in the Brexit basket, and 1% of people in the exit poll said Brexit was their main reason for voting. So they called that badly wrong. Simon Coveney, in the 2017 election, Danny mentions the Fine Gael leadership election, said it was a battle for the soul of the party. Now, I remember writing a piece at the time basically mocking that view, but perhaps Coveney was right, because Leo never seemed to get the soul of the Fine Gael party. In my column last week in the Sunday Times, I wrote at the beginning that one Fine Gael TD told me he had buyer's remorse. That basically Fine Gael had been sold a pup, an electoral pup that they thought would bring them to a wider, to this, exactly as Danny says, wider glory. But he just didn't seem to connect with the wider public.
So did COVID save him to an extent? Because that's when he did seem to connect, when he made speeches like the one we just played, that everyone went along with what the government wanted them to do. The most majority of people did.
Yeah, and I think there's great credit due to him and to that interim government, which, remember, was toughed out electorally by the people. Remember, that was Fine Gael's worst result in electoral terms, in vote percentage terms, since the Second World War. I mean, that's not what Fine Gael TDs elected Leo Varadkar for, but he did step up to the plate. And listening to those words, I mean, it was a different time, and the government responded. I mean, they put in the pandemic unemployment payment. They supported business. They did all the right things. Now, they didn't get everything right, as we know. Government was formed in the middle of COVID, and that was an achievement in and of itself. But I was always struck when Leo Varadkar said he wanted to go into opposition after that election, but circumstances forced him into government.
So if he'd gone into opposition, there would have had to have been a leadership contest in Fine Gael at the time. That would have been part of the rules of the party. I mean, so by going into government, he extended his own career.
I mean, it's interesting now, like, he looked, I mean, one would have to have a heart of stone not to feel some sympathy for him today, particularly when his voice started to break towards the end of his speech. But remember, he desperately wanted to be Taoiseach. I mean, there had been machinations afoot in Fine Gael ever since the 2016 general election, when Enda Kenny's parliamentary party was gutted by about 26 seats from 2011. He desperately wanted to be leader, but today he looked like a rather broken man.
And that's the interesting thing. I think from when Leo Varadkar took back the Taoiseach's office in late 2020, he has never shown the same degree of energy or enthusiasm or for the job as he did in 2017. It's been lethargic. It has been flat. His own TDs describe him as being dismissive around, you know, like, obviously a Taoiseach, you're sponge for approaches and you're getting lobbied from everybody. And, you know, in the early days, there was an energy around Leo Varadkar. He had a coterie of people, the Owen Murphys, the Brian Hayes, even the earlier days, the Michael Darcy's. There was a whole coterie of people around Leo Varadkar who have all just evaporated and gone away. Either they've lost office, they've resigned, or are resigning.
Well, does that show bad management skills on his part, that he managed to assemble this group, but then he wasn't able to retain them? And a lot of them became disillusioned and gave up politics.
It was a dangerous position for Leo Varadkar in, when his closest ally at the cabinet table became Simon Harris. You know what I mean? Given that they they've had tensions in the past before, you know, before. And ultimately, I think he was not able. I think the big benefit of when he took over the first time, because Fine Gael were in control of a minority government, they had much more seats at the cabinet table, much more chairmanship of, you know, committees, etc., to give out. There were many more toys to give out. 2020, he had to start disappointing an awful lot of people. But he started disappointing a lot of his very ultra loyalist people like John Paul Phelan and others, who have become some of his arch critics internally. And that campaign, you know, what we've seen on, we've been reporting on at a parliamentary party meetings week after week, you know, criticising the party leader and criticising the party leadership week after week from the same small group of people has damaged his standing. I think also what damaged Leo Varadkar's standing was the whole GP document leak gate. You know, when he was caught under, I think he was under Garda investigation for a while.
This is when a confidential document was given to the GP, Matthew O'Toole.
O'Toole, yeah. And now he said this was him trying to essentially show, you know, be kind of democratic in a process and show what was kind of in play. That was so ill-judged, and it did the government so much damage, but it did his individual standing as Taoiseach significant damage, from which he, I don't think he's ever properly recovered.
Was heading up some alternative to basically to the traditional GP group, yeah. And that was Leo's defence, that then he was trying to be open to all sides. But it certainly was a very bad look. And I would agree. I don't think he really recovered his authority within the party. And also, I mean, then the 2020 election, Matt. I mean, leaders are there to win elections. And let's be frank, in 2020, Leo Varadkar performed pretty anemically on the campaign trail. There's talk today about Pascal Donoghue replaced him. Pascal was the director of elections. I remember being in the studio with you, Matt, and we were expecting Pascal, but he actually phoned in. You were saying he was out canvassing in Finsbury because he was worried about his own seat, remember? And
so
it was a very tense time for Fine Gael. So that view that he wasn't bringing them electoral success and certainly wouldn't in the future seemed to be an overriding thought of many in Fine Gael today.
Mm. Okay, so did he do the right thing, do you think, by stepping down for the party's sake?
I think as you're writing in a very fine piece, Matt, that was on businesspost.ie this afternoon, I think there's a very, well, you made a very fair point in this, and I thought, you know, him, by removing himself out of the firing line, there's a degree of toxicity that will come away from the Fine Gael brand. A new leader will have an energy that and kind of dynamism that can only help going in at this late stage in a political cycle. Will it have substantial difference for Fine Gael? They're in power an awful long time. They're in power since 2011. You know, you're at the fag end of the political cycle for a lot of these guys. Pascal Donoghue's around a long time. Simon Coveney's been there. Simon Coveney now will be the last remaining member of cabinet from the 2011 cabinet with Enda Kenny. Like, so there is an element of the people are just sick of the sight of
them. Well, then that is a big issue as to who Fine Gael choose to replace him to become Taoiseach, because will they go for somebody for whom the electorate may say, well, sure, that's more of the same. Or do they have anyone else fresh who they could bring forward who would inject a bit of difference and a bit of energy?
Yeah, I mean, the one logic that was put to me was that the party membership, as Gary said, the buyer's remorse of going with Varadkar over Coveney in 2017 may come back into play if Coveney decides to put his hat in the ring, you know, whether or not he seems to think that he's another shot at this. Obviously, there's a lot of attention around Simon Harris, given that he has made no bones of the fact that he wants the leadership. You know, he has proven himself to be a very effective communicator. He is high on energy. He's good with the media, etc. like that. And he's able to communicate quite effectively. And he's not seen as a tribal Fine Gael presence. Like, he's on the moderate wing of the party when it comes to social issues. He's not a traditionalist by any stretch.
He had been the Minister for Health, and that caused its own problems for a previous government.
It did, but I suppose finally a Minister for Health has actually done a decent job and been able to survive it. Like, there really isn't, you know, there's no one, I think, who's occupied that.
Micheál Martin and Brian Cowan both had been to par for the health.
And Varadkar himself?
Yes. So it can sometimes be a stepping stone to become Taoiseach, no matter how badly you might do in the job.
I don't think any of them would have said that their time in health was a success. I think they got through it, or they just managed to muddle through, or they ultimately had to be moved because the controversies were growing. You know, that seems to be the pattern in Ireland when it comes to health ministers.
Yeah. The failures, though, in health and in housing are really what sort of dams this particular government, and maybe dams Fine Gael since 2011. Now, it came into power in horrendous circumstances. Simon Harris was the youngest TD in the Fine Gael parliamentary party who won a seat in 2011. He gave the introductory speech to Enda Kenny.
Nominated Enda Kenny.
Kenny. But those twin pearls of the Irish sort of political class, health and housing, haven't gone away, and I think they're...
And won't be changed by whoever is the leader of the party in the future.
You know, and what happens at the next election, if there's if the opposition in some shape or form gets in, will we see dramatic improvements in health and housing? I'd be doubtful.
Okay, but they probably don't have time to turn it around, whoever the new leader would be. But if it isn't Simon Harris, who I think the bookies have odds on at this stage.
One to seven or something, yeah. The last time I checked, yeah.
Who else could be the candidates? Because when we had Aisling Maloney with us earlier, she was talking about a female. So could there be a female candidate? Has Helen McEntee perhaps been too damaged by the Dublin riots, even if she did survive the Dáil effort to remove her as Minister for Justice?
Yeah, there are two people at Cabinet, Helen McEntee and Heather Humphreys. Although Heather Humphreys, I think, is slightly scarred by the fact that she was the Fine Gael Director of Elections for the referendums, but really did very
well. Was she?
I think, apparently so.
How many broadcast interviews did she do during that? Like one, was
did
it?
Did you interview her, Matt? Did she?
No, we couldn't get anyone senior from Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil or the Greens to come forward to talk about that referendum campaign.
And I think Helen McEntee's issue certainly will go back to, and justice again is a difficult portfolio, but we'll go back to the November riot. And then there's a name that is being mentioned from outside the cabinet, which is Jennifer Carl McNeill, who was bright, young, ambitious, certainly, and doesn't have any fear of taking on Sinn Féin or others. Although I heard Hildegard Nocton not rule herself out today on the news at one with Brian Dobson. I don't think she's really a realistic candidate. But
could it be Daniel, that what they do need is that they do need to try and head Mary Lou MacDonald off of the pass by having a female leader? And even if you would say somebody like Jennifer Carl McNeill doesn't have any cabinet experience, when Mary Lou MacDonald runs to be Taoiseach, as essentially she will be doing as part of the next general election, she won't be coming with any cabinet experience either.
No, she won't. And again, I suppose this will all kind of shake out in the next 24 to 48 hours, I think, because you'll get a fair sense of who the runners and riders genuinely are.
Yeah, what's the time frame that Fine Gael is working to?
Yeah, so they've basically said they want the new leader in place by the time of their Ordesh, which is in mid-April, which is a very, very short period of time. So nominations, I presume, will open very quickly and close as early as this weekend, Saturday. So we'll know by Saturday whether there's a contest or not. If there's no contest, then, you know, if there's only one candidate, we'll have anointed leader and we move on very quickly. We'll have a coronation. If there is a contest, then we're into the likes of the hustings, you know, which I thought the most fascinating aspect of the Fine Gael leadership in 2017, when you actually had Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar articulate two very different visions for Fine Gael. You know, I think the line of Varadkar, the one that stood out to me, is, you know, if you try and be all things to all men, you end up being nothing to anybody. But I do think for this one, you know, Simon Harris is, you know, as I said, you know, long-standing cabinet experience. He's young, he's energetic.
He's 37, yeah. But is he not still regarded as part of the old guard? Would he be regarded as an actual shift by the electorate?
I think it's difficult to know, because again, he would have to come out and define what exactly his platform is. I think the biggest weakness of Simon Harris is, what does he actually stand for?
But and also, Danny, the point about Fine Gael and Leo and his legacy is, well, he never painted a picture of what Fine Gael stood for under his watch. I mean, he talked incessantly about doing things for people who get up early in the morning and that kind of stuff. And there was no vision, I thought, elucidated by him or his team of advisors of what Fine Gael actually stood for, because they weren't really on the centre-right.
Is Pascal Donoghue a non-runner now, Gary?
Or Trotskyites.
Is Pascal Donoghue a non-runner? I mean, he was a guy that we were talking about as possible head of the International Monetary Fund, and yet nobody seems to be talking about him as a potential leader of Fine Gael.
I think if he put his name forward, he would be a serious candidate. He has support within some part of the parliamentary party. Also, I think a lot of people outside the Fine Gael bubble, I think highly of him. He's a widely read man, and he's interested in things that normal people are interested. Comes on with your show, Matt, about Books of the Year, which is a tremendous listen. He goes to football. I mean, he's a guy who sports Spurs, which is a kind of a trial for all sports
anyway, fans. Listen, we need to take a break. We will have Sarah Carey with us when we come back, who wrote a piece in the Irish Independent at the weekend, which got a lot of online attention because She said that it'd be Fine Gael had left her. She couldn't vote for the party again. I don't know if that was a tipping point for Leo Varadkar, but we will ask her about that. And Piers Doherty of Sinn Féin will be with us as well. That's after this. Daniel McConnell, editor of the Business Post, and Gary Murphy, columnist with the Irish edition of the Sunday Times and DCU professor of politics, have stayed with us. But we're joined now by Sarah Carey, who wrote a piece in the Irish Independent at the weekend that got an enormous amount of online reaction. It was under the headline, "I didn't leave Fine Gael, it left me. The establishment has fallen into the abyss." Sarah, explain that. How did Fine Gael leave you?
Good evening, Matt. How are you? And for your listeners who probably don't know much about me, you know, I would be known as a Fine Gael diehard loyalist who'd stick up for them on the worst days. So I think me decrying them in the newspaper was the reason why it got so much attention.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sarah, because you wrote, was a line, "I've defended Fine Gael in everything from water rates to closing A&Es. I stood up for Enda Kenny when he was subjected to relentless sneering from the rest of the media. I haven't left Fine Gael, but Fine Gael left me the day Helen McEntee walked down Store Street surrounded by Gardaí claiming Dublin was safe."
Yeah, and that's an example, Matt, of a trend of what you would have expected hardcore Fine Gael values to be that were simply being abandoned one by one over the past few years. So obviously, you know, a 75% defeat in a referendum finally burst the bubble. But there's been an awful lot of unhappiness, as was evidenced by the poor election results. And it came from a number of things. Obviously, dropping the ball in law and order was a big one. But there was another one I'd like to go back to that was earlier, which was that famous phrase that Leo Varadkar used about wanting to do something for people who get up early in the morning. And he was right about that. Like, I live in Enfield, you know, this pretty ordinary Midlands village. And there's a Cairns bus that comes from Birr, where people get on that bus from 5:30 and 6 a.m. every morning, going into mid-ranking jobs in Dublin, sitting in traffic. And they were entitled to have somebody stick up for them. And instead, the reaction to his comment from the media and from the opposition was that somehow this was dog whistling against the unemployed. And he folded immediately and just let it go. And he never said anything on behalf of those people again. And I think that was one of the moments. The other was, you know, where he was seen to favour particular people and particular kind of people politically. So, for example, when he had appointments to make to the Senate after that general election, a person that should have been appointed was somebody like Noel Rock, who grew up in Ballymun and, you know, a working class guy. And he lost out to appointees from the South County Dublin set. So, you know, it was building, 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 building. And as Gary has described, you know, there have been backbench complaints at parliamentary party meetings for a long time. And there was no change of course. So I think finally, the referendum was the moment when it simply could not be ignored anymore. And when you had the Kieran Cannon announcement too, yet another TD leaving, like, you don't need backbenchers to have a motion of no confidence in the leader. Their declaration of no confidence is the fact that they're simply refusing to run. So I think it was a combination of all those. So I will credit him. Like, he has done the right thing. He finally did see the writing on the wall, and he's done it with dignity, and he's done it in a way, you know, that people can look back and say, fine, he spared a split, he spared, you know, a row, you know, and another bad election result. He's done it in time so that whoever does come in might be able to bed things down. But whoever it is going to have to get back on Fine Gael brand, you know.
So, and do you see anybody who can do that?
Well, everything I'm hearing is that Simon Harris is the guy. Now, will Simon Harris get the message? You know, will he actually, you know, listen to the heartland? Will he come out, you know, and listen to the county councillors and not to these advisors on their six-figure salaries and not to the NGOs who have led them so far off course? Because the crucial thing about that 75% defeat was not simply the scale of the defeat itself, but they never saw it coming. They just had no idea how real people felt. And say, if you compare it with the defeat of the Senate referendum, Enda Kenny felt, you know, during that campaign what was coming and stepped back from it. But they had no idea it was coming. So whoever is the leader, and I think it will be Harris, I don't think there should be a contest. If there is a contest, that shows how completely electorally suicidal Fine Gael really have become. It needs to be a coronation. It all needs to be sorted out very, very quickly in the next couple of weeks. He needs to get down the country and he needs to start talking to county councillors and find out how real people feel about stuff.
Danny McConnell, what do you make of that analysis from Sarah Carey?
There's very little I disagree with. And I think, you know, a lot of what Sarah has articulated there has echoes in what parliament members have been telling us. And, you know, when I was with the Irish Examiner, we poll farmers every year, and, you know, Fine Gael had become the least popular party amongst farmers for, you know, kind of steadily under Leo Varadkar's watch. So there was a clear impression that Fine Gael was losing its connectivity with its rural traditional base. And there were a lot of complaints from the likes of Charlie Flanagan and John Paul Feeney and others that, why are we chasing the so-called woke vote? Why are we going after these kind of, you know, there was this liberal agenda that isn't exactly in our comfort zone, because these people will never vote for Fine Gael long term. You know, these people will never vote for us as a political party. They might come with us on a referendum, but they will not vote for us long term. Our value to society is you know, because that space in the political spectrum is already pretty full, why not eke out some space on the centre right, on law and order, on prudence when it comes to budget, you know, budget matters, and other stuff, and own it, and don't be afraid to own that.
But hold on, Gary, wasn't he the inheritor of the sort of the Garrett Fitzgerald liberal tradition that a lot of people associate with Fine Gael?
Yeah, he was, Matt, and I mean, in one way, he's symptomatic or emblematic of an extraordinary shift in the population. An openly gay man becoming Taoiseach. I mean, I don't think any of us could have thought when we were children that would ever happen.
And son of an immigrant.
Son of an immigrant. You know, the face in many ways of a new Ireland, but the electorate didn't seem to want to go to him. Sarah is really, in one way, the traditional voice of Fine Gael, the other wing, perhaps, the old John Bruton wing, who sadly died a few weeks ago. I slightly disagree with Sarah, though, on the need for a coronation. And the trouble with a coronation is Fine Gael could, again, get quite comfortable with itself that they now have a new chosen one, because Leo Varadkar was the chosen one. Remember, he was the infusion of youth after Enda Kenny. And are we saying now that Simon Harris will be the infusion of youth that Fine Gael needs? And sometimes they...
yeah, because 44 is so past it now, isn't it?
Sometimes
but maybe Simon Harris is the oldest 37-year-old we know.
Sometimes a contest can be good for political parties. And Fine Gael, God knows, needs some good news. So okay. I'm not against the contest.
I want to move it on. Sarah Carey, thank you very much for having been with us. I want to know, we've Piers Doherty with us from Sinn Féin, but just before we talk to Piers, I want to play a little bit of one of the many fiery exchanges that Leo Varadkar had with Mary Lou MacDonald in the Dáil. It was perhaps one of the most noticeable features of his leadership that he really got snippy whenever Mary Lou MacDonald got into his face in the Dáil Chambers. Here they are in March 2023 debating the ending of the eviction ban. And this is how Leo Varadkar responded.
You know, you stood up there and you created a false narrative and another straw man. You said landlords are not to blame for the housing crisis, as if somehow anybody in the government benches ever made that argument. You're the one who's been consistently demonising small landlords and institutional landlords, not us. So don't make that false argument. And Deputy, you kind of make out that somehow Sinn Féin will be able to solve this crisis. Look to the north, and I know you hate when we talk about the north, but look to the north. Let me finish, Deputy. I know you hate the truth. Look to the north, where we've had a Sinn Féin finance minister and a Sinn Féin housing minister. Yeah. Do you know how much social housing you built in Northern Ireland last year? Do you know, Deputy? Under 2,000. In the last year, there was an assembly. Under 2,000. Much less per capita in this state. You say that small landlords aren't to blame for the crisis. Fine. What's your proposal? You want to put an extra tax on small landlords to make it even worse. You say you care about first-time buyers. What do you want to do? You want to take away the Help to Buy scheme. It is a serious issue. And the reason why you consistently shout me down when I try to answer your questions is because you can't handle the answers, because you know they're true.
Okay, Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin, what did you think when you heard the news today?
Look, I think everybody was shocked by the suddenness of this news, Matt. But look, the reality is none of us, and I think the people that I'm talking to on the ground, the people who really want change, none of them are just looking for a rearrangement of the deck chairs. They don't want just one Fine Gael Taoiseach out to be replaced by another Fine Gael Taoiseach. What people are looking for here is a change of government, an option, an opportunity for them to cast judgment on this government. I think Leo Varadkar knew the writing on the walls. Obviously, he's going into an election where even his own political party don't have confidence in fighting that election. A third of them have resigned, and now the leader has resigned with them. So what we really need is that opportunity. We need that election. We need him to go to the park, and that's really what should have been happening today. We're 4 years on from this government being in office, and I think the idea that a small group of Fine Gael TDs and senators will now decide who becomes Taoiseach, I think is really a slap in the face to the electorate. This is a party who came third in the election, going to appoint somebody as Taoiseach who never even put themselves forward for that position. And I think that's not just what should be happening at this point in time. It should be an election.
But realistically, Pearce, are they going to hand the opposition the gift of an election at this time? Surely, politically, as particularly after the referendum humiliation, the parties in government are going to stick there as long as they can.
Well, the problem is if they do that, then it's ordinary people that'll suffer. You know, it's not lost on everybody when we look back at Leo Varadkar's time in office. When he came into government for the first time, we had among the highest home ownership in the whole of the European Union. Now we have among the lowest home ownership in the European Union. House prices have skyrocketed. It's become normalised under Leo Varadkar's time in government that you now have people, loved ones, your mother, your father, your grandparents, your neighbour going into hospital, and they could be still there sitting on a chair the following day, not being able to admit it to a bed. That's the legacy that he carries. So look, it's understandable that a government who has failed on housing, who has failed on health, who has failed on cost of living, one of the things that's going to happen in the next 2 weeks is the government are going to push up the price of petrol and diesel, not just once, but they're going to do it three times now between now and the end of the year. So when a government is failing that much, in my view, obviously they're going to try and cling to power as long as they want. But I think this is going to be a Taoiseach without a mandate. And there is a serious issue in terms of the legitimacy of government, and indeed TDs, including independents, who they'll rely on their votes, that would vote in a Taoiseach of that nature. And I would say to Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, and indeed the Green Party, if you're actually convinced that you're the government to lead over the next period to resolve the issues, some of them that you've created, then let the people have their say. Let the people cast judgment. And if they decide that they want you, then fair enough. But I don't believe that that's what people want. I think people want change. I think people want an opportunity to cast judgment on the entire Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and Green Party government. And that's what should happen now.
There was a listener, though, who sends in a text to say, I remember Leo Varadkar as the first Taoiseach to wish publicly for United Ireland and unification to happen in his lifetime. Do you believe he deserves any credit for assisting in the return of the Assembly and Executive in Northern Ireland, and for expressing stronger views about a United Ireland than perhaps have come from any of his predecessors in Fine Gael?
Well, the one thing I would say, Matt, is, and I think back at the contest for leadership in Fine Gael, when Simon Coveney challenged Leo Varadkar, and both of them had a manifesto. Simon Coveney, actually, as part of his manifesto, was that he would set up a committee, an Oireachtas committee on Irish unity. That's what, 7 years ago now? We still haven't had a budget within Fine Gael. Even American politicians, as we see reflected in our Sunday newspapers here back home, are calling on politicians at home to look at the obvious, that the conversation in terms of constitutional change is happening. And I think that is a problem. Yes, Leo has articulated that he wants a United Ireland in his lifetime, but Leo isn't a commentator. Leo was the Taoiseach. Leo had the opportunity to set up the processes where we had a proper, engaged and informed conversation, and looked at the planning that is needed for the referendum that, in my view, that will happen in this decade. And that hadn't happened. So I think the next Taoiseach will have to grasp that nettle. I hope that the next Taoiseach is a Sinn Féin Taoiseach, because I hope that there will be a general election and that we can deal with those issues. But more importantly, as I said, the priority for us will be housing, health and cost of living. And I think that's what people want. And people know, there'll be a lot of speculation about Simon Harris or different people, Simon Coveney and so on. These are all people who sign, who have been in government, people who have stood over the housing crisis, people who have stood over record levels of homelessness, people who have watched as record numbers leave our shores to go for places like Australia, people who have seen who have underfunded our health service, who have an embargo in terms of recruitment in our hospitals. Like, you know, replacing one person with another just because they have a different personality isn't going to change politics here, and that's what okay. people need. They need a real change.
Pierce Doherty, Deputy Leader Sinn Féin, thank you. Gary Murphy, Danny McConnell, please stay with us and we will be back and we'll be joined by Seán Murray from Brussels, because is it possible that Leo Varadkar could end up in a big job overseas, even though he said in his resignation statement today he has nothing lined up or hasn't even considered that? We'll get to that after the traffic with Mark Hogan. Okay, Danny McConnell, editor of the Business Post, and Gary Murphy from Dublin City University, Professor of Politics, have stayed with us. And Gary, I wonder, what will this do for the relationship between Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and the Greens? Because Eamon Ryan, the Green Party leader, today said, look, the agreement between the three parties, irrespective of who the leaders are, but could it change the dynamic if a new leader of Fine Gael decides they have to stake out the ground on something new to try and ensure survival?
Oh, it certainly could, Matt. I mean, and that's one of the issues I think that faces this government when it eventually does end, and when the Taoiseach, as is his... assuming it's a he who replaces Leo Varadkar, his constitutional prerogative is to call the election. Now, we assume that that person would call it with Micheál Martin and Eamon Ryan. But I can only imagine when Leo Varadkar told Micheál Martin last night that the first thing he probably said was, "You can't be serious." With literally,
I can actually hear him say that.
literally, barely a year to go. I mean, and this is one of the things I would be critical of Leo Varadkar for. The lateness in the electoral cycle. I mean, I was amazed when I heard him say today that the new leader will have 2 months. 2 months is no time for the local and European elections. And then we might have an election. I mean, I think the government or the Fine Gael party will definitely want the new leader to have a giveaway budget.
Yeah, but Gary, you see, when you say 2 months is no time, you're working maybe by the old rules of politics. Hasn't politics just completely changed? Everything is now so instant. You know, recently in the studios, I think it was Gerard Howland said after the referendum results, you know, it wouldn't have any impact on the leadership of the parties. Well, now we're down a Fine Gael leader because the perception is that's not the done thing. The rules have changed internationally.
That is true. And social media, I think, has changed the sort of the tone. We heard Ciarán Cannon talk about the toxicity of public life now. And I think that is a big issue for people wanting to run. Maybe Leo Varadkar just had enough of public life.
Mm. Okay, well, we'll get to his future now because Seán Murray has joined us from Brussels, the Europe correspondent of Euronews. He said in his going away speech today that he didn't have anything lined up. But could it be, Seán, that there will be jobs available to him in Europe, should he so want one?
Well, there certainly is an election coming up in June, and then there will be a new change in the Commission, the Council, the main two EU institutions aside from the European Parliament. So there will definitely be openings there. The way it is working, though, is that he's in the European People's Party, and Ursula von der Leyen is running for Commission President. And the way it's divvied up is that the EPP would take that role, and then the position of European Council President, which is currently filled by Charles Michel, would go to the Liberals. So it might be difficult for him to fit in. Unless, of course, he was seen as some sort of compromise candidate because he's a former Prime Minister and he does have, you know, quite a lot of success in that role. But a lot of these things are often quite about horse trading and political influence. And I don't see the EPP getting both the Council Presidency and the Commission Presidency. So that would be a blockage for him.
How highly regarded was he in Brussels?
And Brexit obviously dominated Brussels for so long, for several years, and Leo Varadkar was leading on that position, himself and Micheál Martin. So I think he was very well regarded there. He garnered a lot of support from the member states, 26 countries behind him. Irish diplomats did that. I think when he first arrived in Brussels, there people were happy to see someone who was very young, who came from an immigrant background. You know, there was diversity there. He's a gay man. So people were very sort of welcoming. And also he has been outspoken over the last few months, as we know, on the issue regarding Gaza. And I think people's, there is, while not all member states agree with him, I think there is credit given to him for standing by Ireland's positions in that. But The other issue is that, you know, Ukraine has been dominating, as we know, existential war in Europe, and Ireland isn't as strongly involved in these conversations because, of course, we don't have our own defence industry. We're not, members of NATO and so on. So Ireland doesn't really have a prominent role at the moment when it comes to these existential issues. But overall, I think he's seen as a very constructive character.
Thank you very much, Seanan Murray. Daniel McConnell, Seanan mentioned Gaza there. I mean, could it be that the strength in the position that he took in relation to Gaza, which I think probably resonated with a lot of people in Ireland, were contrasted with the lack of strength and follow through in a lot of domestic issues?
Yeah, I think so. And Gary and myself were only talking about this before we came in. Was, you know, did he go as far as he did on Gaza in the United States, given the fact that he probably knew he was stepping down, that there was probably,
you know, he could have a free hit.
He could have a free hit, etc. Because in fairness, his speech in the White House has resonated. It's all across the US media. Like, they are saying, you know, Ireland is standing up for Gaza and putting it up to Joe Biden yet again. And, you know, in fairness to Andy Kenny, he put it up to Donald Trump at the time, you know, about immigrants and etc. and St. Patrick being an immigrant. So there is, in a way, a noticeable difference between how he has spoken on some of those international issues and how weak or passive he has been. I think what his biggest weakness here, Matt, and one of the biggest criticisms I've always had of Leo Varadkar, he's often been a commentator in chief when he's been the Taoiseach. He's talked about, isn't that awful, that's awful thing is happening in our society, when he is
the Garda numbers, for example, would be a prime numbers, example.
Housing is another one where he's saying it's awful and it frustrates me that this happens. And it's, you know, even around, you know, there was criticism during COVID around information coming up through line departments. You know, he would vent, concern or frustration that bad information was being given or whatever. You know, that's not what you want from a Taoiseach. You want someone who's actually going to knock heads together and actually get something done. But he always seemed that little bit removed or unable to get the system to change.
Maybe the bureaucracy defeated him and he just couldn't take it anymore, Matt. Because the bureaucracy has defeated... he's not the first Taoiseach, let's just put it like that, who has been defeated by the sort of Byzantine way Irish government works, the slow way. I mean, listening to Piers Doherty there, it was very interesting first to listen to Leo being passionate, and he was often passionate in the Dáil, but never seemed to translate that outside. But as I said earlier, Matt, I think if Sinn Féin are in government, they will find the wheels of bureaucracy in Irish government work slowly.
Gary Murphy, Daniel McConnell, thank you both so much for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.